Stay tuned after the show for a message from Chevron.
I'm Anthony Adragna. This is Politico Energy. If you're from Appalachia, you might understand just how much coal is ingrained in this country's DNA.
My grandfather was a coal miner. My father was a coal miner. And I lived in the coal mining town.
Coal powered the country well before oil and gas came about. And it also fueled the growth of the American economy in small towns and big cities alike.
Everything was coal, coal, coal. That's where the money was, in the coal mine.
And coal's impact in this part of the country has a lot of times been bloody.
Let's get up here at 5 o'clock in the morning and fix you a good cup of coffee. Let's be down there and show these Brookside workers what we can do for them. Come
all, ye young pillars. From 1890 through the 20s, skirmishes over unions and organized labor sparked what were known as the coal wars across many states, including West Virginia, Kentucky, and Colorado.
There were coal mining companies and coal miners that literally fought battles over each other and killed each other out in the fields, out in the mines. Literally killed each other.
The fact that miners were willing to take up arms to improve their conditions speaks volumes as to how important coal was to them. But now that the demand for American coal has severely declined, and Democrats want to speed up the growth of green energy, the challenge for coal country and for the government is all about preparing these once coal-reliant towns for a rapidly changing energy landscape.
Should Democrats care whether it gives them more voters? No, I don't think so. You know, it's a thankless job. I think that's the bottom line here. Like, Democrats should do it because they control Congress and the White House, and they can actually walk in lockstep on policy should they choose.
So today, I talked to my colleague Zach Coleman about our reporting on the road ahead for Democrats to bolster an energy transition that won't leave coal country behind. Why don't we start with this idea of a just transition? Where did that phrase originate from, and what does it mean?
Yeah, it originates in the labor movement. I mean, the idea is that if there is going to be an economic transition, that the people who were doing the jobs that are going to be less central to the economy have some way to still earn a living and live the lives that they live. What we've seen is that hasn't ever really happened. I mean, think about free trade, think about NAFTA. People were promised that they would have good jobs in this globalized economy. And what we saw was the decimation of Main Street all across the country. And I think there's a lot of people who are very concerned that the same thing is going to happen in a lot of these fossil fuel dependent communities and towns. It's not about just going into a mine or stepping onto a drill rig. It's about the community that grows up alongside all those jobs and all the indirect jobs. And there's some really hard questions that people are going to have to answer if we're going to take care of those communities.
Democrats say that they've learned their lessons from prior iterations of this battle. What are some of the lessons that they say that they've learned in our reporting?
You hear the words that are being said, and you still do wonder what lesson has been learned. I think that there's more of a recognition that it will just take massive amounts of investments, but I don't think there's a wrestling with actually how massive those investments are. And then you've got to have a coherent message that's tied together. A lot of Democrats now talk about, we don't want you to have to move. And we understand that, you know, you take pride in your work. There are going to be different jobs. So I think that there's an understanding that this is skilled labor. People don't want to move, that there needs to be investment in communities and people, and not just retraining kind of ad hoc, because there's a whole pride and a culture wrapped up in a lot of the things that people do. And that's especially true of people in the oil patch, in the gas fields, and in the coal mines.
I travel the world, man, and you will be surprised how many people make no connection between coal and electricity.
Let's look at two early episodes from the Biden administration, one that's more successful for Democrats, one that's less successful. Starting with the less successful one, I think I would zoom in on International Climate Envoy John Kerry's comments about retraining coal miners to be solar panel installers. Why did that ring hollow to a lot of people that we talked to?
Well, they've heard it before. They've heard it before. This was Obama's line as well.
As we speak, old factories are reopening to produce wind turbines. People are going back to work installing energy-efficient windows, and small businesses are making solar panels.
But those jobs don't pay well, not compared to a coal mining job where you could earn six figures with a high school degree. So that's not going to be something that is attractive to people. And oftentimes, those jobs weren't anywhere near where people lived that would have to give up those fossil fuel jobs. So you're talking about relocating someone, and maybe you can't even afford to relocate. You own your house or it's been passed down. Think about having to go find another home in maybe a more expensive city at a job that pays you less with fewer benefits because those jobs aren't unionized. So, you know, this was not an attractive suite of jobs for people who have good paying ones right now.
And I got to tell you, as you know, as part of this, I really zoomed in on West Virginia, given that state's, you know, the transition off of coal as a dominant energy source in the country, but also the two senators, Shelley Moore Capito, the Republican, and Joe Manchin, the Democrat, being poised to play potentially really pivotal roles in the infrastructure discussion. And I got to tell you, Hillary Clinton's line from the 2016 campaign about putting a lot of coal miners out of business still rang front of mind for a lot of people.
Because we're going to put a lot of coal miners and coal companies out of business. And we're going to make it clear that we don't want to forget those people.
But let's look at one episode that I think was more successful for Democrats who say that they've learned lessons. And that was during an early budget floor vote in the Senate this year. What happened there?
So John Barrasso from Wyoming ended up attaching an amendment that essentially was a shot at President Biden's policy to halt new leasing on federal oil and gas. And the Democrats are like, oh, how are we going to play this? Like, you know, we want to support this transition to a green economy. We need to support the president's policies here. But these are also legitimate concerns. At some point, Martin Heinrich's office says, no, we want to take a stand on this. So he wanted to take a stand on this and said, look, Senator Barrasso and I disagree on a lot of things, but what we don't disagree on is we need to support these schools, and I support this amendment. Here's the thing, though. Voting on a non-binding amendment to this big spending bill is not the same as actually coming through. So that's where we're going to have to watch for the next several years.
After all these conversations we've had with people, how do you think communities on the ground are going to ultimately measure success on whether Democrats are able to deliver on these promises?
So this is a complicated question. So much of the response to Democrats' plan about a green transition is not just about the energy jobs. It's wrapped up in all these other cultural things too. But I think by and large, massive investments in communities to diversify their economies is something that people on the ground there agree with. I think that federal investments that go towards, diversifying those economies and investing in people if there is going to be economic dislocation. So you're talking about wage replacement, you're talking about, maybe paying for early retirement for people who cannot be retrained. Those are the types of things that can make a difference around the edges. But really, it's going to be about bringing big jobs to these communities so that people don't have to uproot their lives.
For more news on energy and the environment, subscribe to our newsletter at politico.com/morningenergy. If you want to support our show, the best way to do so is by leaving us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. I'm Anthony Adragna. Talk to you again tomorrow.
Chevron is lowering the carbon emissions intensity of their operations, exploring renewable fuels of the future, and investing in low-carbon technologies. Because it's only human to protect the home we share. Learn more at chevron.com/lowercarbon.